This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening as we explore some pretty interesting long shots and unlikelies for this Friday, including the news that Republicans and Democrats might actually buckle down and enact a sentencing and criminal justice reform bill. Is it urgency that Republicans and Democrats see when they look at the prison system in the U.S.? The United States has 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prison population. Here's House Speaker Paul Ryan, who says Congress is finally going to do something about it.
I think because of the progress made in the other body and because of the fact that four of our bills are out, we got two more we want to get done. We're on track for doing that. I'm optimistic and hopeful.
As of 2014, the number of Americans behind bars in local, state and federal prisons topped 2.3 million. The federal prison system accounts for the largest increase in prisoners. Since 1980, the population has increased 786% at a cost of more than $80 billion. That's $600 per taxpayer household. For the past year, a group of senators ranging from Tea Party Republicans to East Coast Democrats have been working on reforms to change America's sentencing policy and approach to fighting crime. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, joins me. There's progress. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, John.
So what explains this bipartisanship? The White House has already moved in the direction of criminal justice reform. Congress has some common ground.
Congress has plenty of common ground, and they always have. The details have been important, politics have been important, and also other emergencies that have gotten in the way. Look, the clock is ticking, John. That's the major factor here. The election is coming, and really, after July 4th, realistically, you're not going to get a lot done in Congress. People who've been working on this legislation for years are trying to push the momentum now, and they came a long way to doing that yesterday, announcing new co-sponsors and a new agreement in the Senate. And really what this is designed to do is show for the first time that the Senate has 60 votes. They can pass a bill on sentencing reform and get something on the president's desk. Here's Dick Durbin. He's on the Judiciary Committee. He helped negotiate this. He's a Democrat from Illinois.
We think this is the most comprehensive, far-reaching criminal justice reform which Congress has seen for decades. And we believe, critically, this bill can pass the United States Senate with both a majority of Democrats and a majority of Republicans supporting it.
Unfortunately, in this day and age, you can't take the word of a Democrat on something like that. What did the Republicans say?
No, you really can't. Let me play you the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Chuck Grassley. He's key here for so many reasons. It was Grassley who balked after an agreement months ago on sentencing reform. He didn't want to do it at all. People thought this thing was dead. Grassley has come around, and he's the main conduit to the leader, to Mitch McConnell. Grassley has also been the target of Democrats on the whole Merrick Garland issue, John, and a lot of people were afraid that the partisan fight over the Supreme Court would drive all these Democrats and Republicans to their corners, that they wouldn't be able to agree on criminal justice reform. Here's Grassley.
There aren't many comprehensive bills with this magnitude that have earned this type of support.
Do these lawmakers think this is a political, you know, issue that is going to help them electorally in the fall? Or do they actually just really see that the mandatory minimum sentences and all the stuff that was done in the 1980s needs to be reversed?
Mixture of policy and politics, and hopefully in a way that leads to something getting done. Mark Kirk is one senator who's up for re-election in a liberal state. He's a Republican in Illinois, Barack Obama's home state. Mark Kirk is in trouble, John, and Mark Kirk is now a co-sponsor of this bill. He thinks it's a political benefit to him. You want to know about all of the other vulnerable Republicans in Senate races. Most of them haven't signed on yet, so that remains a question. Every race is different, so we'll see. But this is also a time where the White House has been trying to push the positive politics on this. Late last month, you saw the president make a very public move to commute the sentences of 61 nonviolent drug offenders, shorten their sentences, let them get out of jail. This was a way to try to keep the public and the Congress's attention focused on this. John, Senator Mike Lee is a conservative from Utah. He's an ally of Ted Cruz, and he's also on this bill, along with Durbin and all of the liberals. Mike Lee often tells the story about a guy named Weldon Angelos who sold a couple of bags of pot, three of them to be exact, but got a 55-year sentence because he had a gun on him that he never used. Here was Lee yesterday.
Mr. Angelos received a minimum mandatory sentence of 55 years in prison. So this young man, in his mid-20s, father of two young children, will, absent some change, be in prison until he's about 80 years old for selling three dime bag quantities of pot.
And again, this is him sounding like a social liberal, you know, working for an advocacy group. And clearly the story has affected him. And there's bipartisan support for really dealing with some of these consequences of mandatory minimum sentences.
John, the Senate bill reduces mandatory minimums, but only for people convicted of low-level, nonviolent crime. That's it. No upper-level crimes, and certainly nothing involving weapons or violent crime. It also allows people who are in prison for long periods of time to participate in job training, mental illness treatment, drug and alcohol treatment programs that are qualified, then apply back to the judge that convicted them, show they've made progress, and get early release. Again, nobody who's committed a violent crime or an upper-level crime is allowed to do that at all. It has new mandatory minimums, actually expanded sentences for crimes involving the opioid fentanyl that has devastated so many states in the Northeast and across the country, that heroin-like prescription drug fentanyl.
But the ridiculous thing there is you're using the Rockefeller drug law logic to fight fentanyl, and you'll end up with a prison full of fentanyl addicts.
John, supporters say that that provision is not targeted towards addicts, but towards traffickers, and it might be an inducement to wavering senators in states where fentanyl's a major problem to get them to come on board. You can maybe see the smart politics there. You're right to be concerned. A lot of people who negotiated this are concerned, but they say it's only targeted to traffickers who are moving this stuff across state lines.
Well, we'll see where it goes. A long, long trip between here and actually the president's desk. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks so much, Todd.
You got it, John.
So how meaningful is all this to people in the system? There are numerous fights ahead that could end up putting more people in jail for some crimes and quietly making it harder to prosecute white-collar crimes. Glenn E. Martin is a criminal justice reform advocate who spent 6 years in prison for robbery. He's president and founder of Just Leadership USA, an organization dedicated to cutting the U.S. correctional population in half by 2030. Welcome.
Good to be back on.
So the language that you're hearing from Congress, do they want to get near cutting the population by half?
You know, what we're looking at is a bill that began as extremely incremental and modest, and then folks went away to, instead of strengthening this bill, actually further weakening the bill. You know, I refer to it as a meaningful distraction. Obviously, there are folks who will benefit from this change in law, and anything we can do to give liberty back to folks who have suffered from our war on drugs is important. At the same time, you know, when I think of the fact that our former Attorney General Eric Holder publicly said that we have far too many people in prison for far too long for no good law enforcement reason, and continued to refer to our war on drugs as a huge failure, communities that are impacted by these policies were looking for a solution that's commensurate with the scope of the problem, and this bill gets nowhere near there.
Is what you're saying that when sentences were changed and the approach on the war on drugs was changed in the 80s and 90s, that was revolutionary change, but this is incremental reversal. It's not big.
Absolutely. The type of human carnage that's been caused by our drug policies require a response that takes political courage. Here you have, yes, you have this sort of bipartisan kumbaya moment, but it's not producing the kind of results that's going to have significant impact on communities that have been ravaged by our mandatory minimum drug laws, the enhancements. I mean, here's a bill that essentially comes out and suggests that our mandatory minimum drug laws have not worked, and yet embedded inside of this very bill are new mandatory minimum laws.
Let's talk a little bit about this idea of violence and the use of weapons. I mean, on the one hand, Republicans are these passionate Second Amendment advocates that, you know, in fact, everyone should carry a gun. But if you use a gun in a crime, you're locked away for life. It seems there's an incompatibility there.
There's not only a huge amount of hypocrisy there, but the fact of the matter is that Americans should pay attention to the fact that we have defined many things as violent crimes where there's no actual violence involved in the commission of the crime. So the possession of the weapon becomes the violent crime. And I'm sorry to tell people, but, you know, folks who sell drugs often have a weapon somewhere close by. And so what we're suggesting is that
prosecutors use that detail – to push the case in court, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we've created a tremendous amount of sentencing enhancements based on things like having the possession of a gun while the commission of a drug crime. And what it's led to is where we are now with 65 million Americans having a criminal record on file. We've spent trillions of dollars, locked up 45 million people, and drugs are as inexpensive and as available as they've ever been.
The Congress would have us believe that, okay, we're going to get rid of the low-hanging, obvious mistakes like the dime bag, you know, story that was told there by Senator Mike Lee. But does that mean that everyone who's left is who they intended to lock up? I mean, isn't there some need to say the whole thing was a mistake, not simply that we got a few people who are actually innocent?
Yeah, this is the problem with hoping for significant change working from the top down. Essentially, this is an issue that's always been couched in risk. We use dog whistle politics to define the people we lock up as monsters and animals and thugs and so on. And so what
That was the sort of Clinton language of the 90s.
Oh, that is
– Is that being reversed?
That is arguably the language that we continue to use today. Senator Cornyn, who's a supporter on this bill, talks about the importance of preserving and expanding mandatory minimums for certain offenders even as he signs on to this very bill. And he points to cases of individual cases of police officers and others being killed, you know, obviously really horrendous situations to make policy. And so we continue to think about our criminal justice policymaking as really good politics, even if it's really poor policy. And it feels to me like we're spinning our wheels. 2.3 million Americans in prison on any given day. This bill would have affected about 13,000 people. That's minimized now that we've removed the gun provision. And what is that really going to do to put a dent in our criminal justice population and mass incarceration in general?
Glenn E. Martin, president and founder of Just Leadership USA. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.